You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hi, I'm Julia Dennison, host of We Are Family, and I just wanted to give a heads up to those of you around kiddos that the episode this week covers adult subjects and contains some adult language too. Thank you.
My name is Ben Feldman, and to me, family is exhausting.
Hello, and welcome to We Are Family. I'm here with actor and producer Ben Feldman. You'll know him as Jonah Sims on Superstore, Michael Ginsburg on Mad Men, Ron LaFlame in Silicon Valley, and Tyler Tuskman in Monsters at Work. He's also starred on Broadway in The Graduate, among plenty of other things. He's dad to son Charlie and daughter Effie with his wife and fellow actor Michelle Mullitz. Ben, welcome to We Are Family.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So my first question is, you all can't see him right now because obviously podcast, but I see a giraffe head behind you. So I'm guessing that's not your room, is it?
It is not, although some of my friends might argue that I have a bit of a giraffe fetish. So it would not be unlikely that that giraffe head would be in another room in the house. But I am in Charlie's room. He just went to school and I'm giving my wife the rest of the house.
Nice.
And also I figured it was appropriate to do a family podcast next to my son's bunk bed.
It's a requirement. But we should also just specify that that is not, as far as I can tell, a real giraffe behind you.
No, that is a paper mache. That is a paper mache giraffe. God forbid we actually had taxidermied, beautiful, exotic, amazing animals in our house.
Oh my goodness. So how old is Charlie and how old is Effie?
Charlie's going to be 4 at the end of October. And Effie turned 2 at the end of April already.
Got it. Okay, so that's, they're pretty close in age. So that's a handful. You had 200.
They're extremely close in age. I think that's why it's so exhausting. They're a year and a half apart.
Wow.
Which is insane. I don't recommend it. But, you know, it'll pay off at some point.
Do you remember anything from sort of those first 2 years of parenthood, or is it a blur?
No. No, I mean, I think my wife would argue that I don't remember anything anyway. Everything is a blur until about last week. But yeah, the first couple years are a total blur. There are bits and pieces I remember. And then she came along, Effie came along, and then I just haven't slept in a year and a half maybe or so. So it's not conducive to memory.
What is sleep? Yeah, I have a daughter. She is 5. And I will say 5 is good. I like 5. I think I like 5. I mean, 5 comes with opinions, lots of them. So be prepared. But, you know, they had those at 4.
Yeah, but I look forward to opinions. I like questions. I've been waiting for them to ask, you know, at first, when they're really young, they're just cocky. They just pretend like they know everything or they're uninterested in what they don't know. And somewhere around Charlie's age, I mean, Effie says why a lot, but I feel like it's almost a nervous tick.
Oh, right.
She'll just say why, why? And I literally, I can answer with anything and she'll go, oh, but Charlie genuinely is asking a lot of questions. If he doesn't understand a word in a book that we're reading, he'll ask. Some mammoths showed up in a book the other day, and he was clearly alarmed and asked me, had a lot of questions about mammoths, and I had to explain to him what extinction is. So
right. Oh,
we're
boy.
Getting to that phase, which I'm into.
We're going to rewind a little bit since this is a podcast about family, and I'd love to hear about your own family. Can you tell me a little bit about your upbringing, like your earliest memories? What was family life like for you as a kid?
It's funny. I only recently learned, because I only recently started therapy, that it's not normal to have zero memories from like before you were 8. I just thought nobody, I was like, oh yeah, we don't remember things before we were 8. But that's when my parents got divorced. So who knows what was going on pre that. I can't imagine it was an incredible environment. But the divorce was great. And they lived near each other and they both remarried. And I have no bad memories. So fortunately, my defense mechanisms in my brain have just kind of, I guess, blocked them all out if I do have any. But my dad remarried and I got a stepsister out of it as well. And they're still around and married to this day. My mom dated about a million people and then married this like Irish Catholic construction worker who was like racist and blew things up for a living. He was very charming, but but like, you know, he lived in the basement and he had a Bronco with a license plate that said boom, and he was an amateur stripper, I learned later.
Oh.
So that was like fascinating.
Just father figure right there for you.
Yeah. The craziest thing is all of the different, there's certainly elements of my personality that I'm not thrilled about that I can attribute to the various father figures I had. But I also think that he was useful. I mean, I think until this like super construction workery, like conservative, like weightlifter guy, I was kind of a wuss. And he was the one that was like, you know, quit whining about this, get outside, you know, join the whatever team. And I think there were elements that he added to my life that I'm grateful for, even though I'm sure they're outweighed by some of the uglier ones.
Oh, jeez.
But I dug it. I had a good, I was happy. Like if you asked, you know, 10-year-old me, if I was sad, I remember being really happy that my parents were divorced. I used to had this like line I remember as a kid saying, it was like two different sitcoms that I would travel back and forth between each week, which I guess shows how much television I watched when I was a kid. But like,
right.
You know, if I was in trouble with one family, I knew that on Thursday I'd be going to dad's house and I wasn't in trouble over there. If I needed to borrow money and dad didn't want to lend it to me, I knew I was going to mom's house on Sunday. For some reason, I made it work and I really dug it. So,
okay. Well, that's reassuring.
I liked my childhood.
That's good. I'm a divorced mom. And so I co-parent half the time with my daughter and she goes to her dad. So that's reassuring. So what would you say to like divorced parents as a kid of divorce? Is there anything that you would kind of wish that your parents had done differently or something that you feel like is important?
I mean, again, who knows? Maybe I blocked out anything they did wrong. But but I genuinely had a very happy divorced child life. They got along. They communicated. I think that was even then, I think I understood that that was important. I understood that that was a plus in my in my situation, that they lived near each other and that they communicated. You know, they were cool with each other. And I remember I was on Drew Barrymore's show, and she was really into it as another divorced parent. Like she actually brought this. I must have talked about this somewhere in the press. I did not remember talking about it, but she brought this up, so I had to because I am not Drew Barrymore's friend. But there is the greatest birthday present I ever got when I was 16. My mother or one of them took me out to dinner, and the other one was at the restaurant, which was surreal to me. Oh. And the reason being is that they sat down and they explained to me my 16th birthday present, and it was a trip to New York without them, with a friend of mine. And They handed me this little book, and every single page was an instruction. So it would be like the first, like it'd be like, walk outside, turn left, catch a cab going west. You've got a reservation at blah, blah, blah.
Oh my God.
And then you're going to this afterwards. And it was a whole weekend that they had planned every single moment of together. And it was the coolest. I remember being like, I have the coolest parents ever.
Oh my God. That's really adorable. I'm kind of into that.
Oh, it was crazy. And, well, the coolest part about it was they got me I was super into theater at the time, and they got me two tickets to two shows. One was Funny Thing Happened with Nathan Lane, which is like old school Broadway and whatever.
Yeah.
But the other one was a brand new show that had just transferred to Broadway that everybody was talking about called Rent. And so I got to go see the original cast of Rent, like right after when it was brand new, alone, without my parents, unsupervised on this awesome, super overly planned trip to New York. It was like the greatest gift ever. So,
oh my God, that is so cool. I love that. I might emulate that idea.
You should. And 16-year-olds are more capable of, that's what's horrifying to me is that, you know, in like 10 minutes, my kids are going to be old enough for me to like send them to a major city without me and they'll be fine. They won't die.
Oh my God, totally.
Everybody did that stupid cliche that it's so boring to me about how it happens so fast. Then you become a parent. You're like, oh, it's on my mind. It's a part of every single day. I'm constantly being reminded how quickly this goes by. And all the things that I'm complaining about now, I'm going to desperately miss when I'm older. If my in-laws are, and my parents are any indication, it's all I'm going to care about.
Yeah, no, totally. So speaking of your dad, so your dad runs an advertising agency, right? Is that right?
Or,
and so obviously like your big role with Michael Ginsberg in Mad Men, where you played a copywriter in an advertising agency, What was that like to take on that role? Did you feel like you were playing your dad?
Actually, more playing my mom. They were both in advertising, but my mom was essentially Lizzie Moss's kid, was Peggy essentially.
Oh, wow.
And my mom traveled back and forth between New York and DC, and she was a copywriter. Both of them really, you know, they both loved the show and they were both really excited when I joined the cast. So yeah, it was really, really cool to sort of be play acting my parents' history.
Yeah. So now I have to ask a question. So on Instagram, you posted a note that you wrote to your mom. You know where I'm going with this.
I do.
When you were 12, was it, I think, maybe camp or something, but you were mm-hmm. asking about a certain magazine, i.e. mm-hmm. Playboy, mm-hmm. And about the subscription, I think, that she needed to pay for or something. Can you talk about that? What the heck?
What was it? Did I say that I did it behind her back? See, that's the other thing about...
I think I'm going to pull up the note.
Okay, pull up the note.
Mom, I know you're going to kill me, but there's nothing I can do about this Playboy thing. I didn't even subscribe.
I didn't even prescribe.
Who's Evan prescribe? I didn't even prescribe to it. Anyway, I owe $21.93. Can you help me out? 5 question marks.
I'm sure I prescribed to it.
Yeah, right.
Actually, knowing my mom, she probably got the subscription for me. My mom was super. I mean, it's unconventional, and I'm not recommending anything to parents, but I will say this: my mother was super, super cool about that kind of stuff. Like when I was mm-hmm. in sleepaway camp, she sent us something. I forget. I don't know if it was like a Playboy or something. Look, I get it. There's a million parents that are probably listening to this and going, "Oh my God, that's horrible. She should be arrested." But I will say this, my mom was super liberal about a lot of stuff, from whether it was Playboy to like weed. And mm-hmm. I never really had problem. Like I had a lot of other friends who had super conservative parents who were highly protective of things like that. And those were the guys in college that were wasted,
right,
and disrespectful and had problems and addiction mm-hmm. and whatever. Maybe not addiction. Addiction is a disease, but they were reckless,
right?
And I never found myself to be reckless. And so, you know, take that for what it's worth. But she was really cool about that stuff. Now, should you send a 12-year-old a porn at camp? Probably not. My mother was on one end of the spectrum, but there are lessons I think to be learned from her side of the spectrum.
I think so, too. I mean, that reminds me of when I was in France at 16 and I was drinking wine with my French family. It's like, and over in America, kids are binging because they're having to do it in the woods somewhere.
That's funny that when my mother moved to France. She moved to the south of France when I was in college, and I would go and visit all the time. And those kids, the kids that I hung out with there were just so much cooler. Like they were just, they didn't need to get wasted. They thought that Americans mm-hmm. were, you know, ridiculous. And I'm sure this is still our image to France and everybody else. But in retrospect, they just sort of, I think they imagined that we were all just like loud frat boys.
Right.
Like they were just so disgusted by our overindulgence and all of the things that were so completely normal and casual to them. That was a big lesson that I took whenever I used to go visit my mom in France.
Right. And I think talking about sex with your kids, they often say that when you think it's time, it's too late. They're already talking about it with their friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I never had that birds and bees conversation with my parents. Does that happen? Does anybody actually go, "Mom"? Like I know Charlie said to Michelle the other day, "Where do babies come from?"
Oh, yeah.
But like he does, he's not really having the conversation. Like he then. Right. He went on to posit that women have boobs because that's the baby's knees.
I love that. It's like you don't even want to correct it. It's just amazing.
Like, he's just trying to understand the basics of anatomy. I think by the time you really have questions about sex and reproduction, whatever, you've figured them out with your friends. I don't know anybody that's like having that, you know, 11-year-old sit-down talk with Timmy.
Right. But at the same time, it's like as a parent, you want to be there, the kind of parent that they could talk to you about it if they had to.
Yeah, exactly. They shouldn't feel scared. These things shouldn't be taboo.
Right, totally.
I remember there was a moment in high school where my mom said something like, you know, "I'm sure your friends, you know, everybody's smoking weed and I'm sure you've done blow and blah, 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 and this and that." And I remember thinking like, oh no, like I have, is my mom going to be disappointed in me that I've never tried blow at this point? But like, it was so normal to her that it became normal to me. And so it was never taboo. And so I never really, you know, when I was a 20 something in LA and I was overcompensated for doing TV shows. Yeah. Maybe I did a little too much blow then, but I don't attribute that to my bad parenting. I think that I attribute that to LA's bad parenting, Hollywood's.
Also,
no one would
be more about gel coat.
When the fourth round would...
Don't you call in the...
Don't touch that dial. That's right, we're still calling it a dial here because it's Emmy season on The Awardist. With the dazzling Oscar season behind us, we are now turning our attention to smaller screens to track which shows are headed to the podium and which shows stopped us in our tracks. Join me, Jared Hall, Entertainment Weekly's executive editor, as well as EW's TV-obsessed staffers every Thursday starting April 4th as we share our opinionated hot takes and insight into the Emmys race. The Awardist will get behind the scenes with the creators and stars themselves during in-depth, can't-miss interviews. Follow the long road to the Emmys with The Awardist podcast Thursday starting April 4th on your favorite podcast platform, and be sure to check out more Emmys coverage at ew.com/awardist.
Okay, so talking about sort of dating and, you know, growing up and everything, after seeing your parents get divorced, did that kind of change your concept of marriage and whether or not you even wanted to get married?
Yes, for sure. I think it, you know, it was interesting because it wasn't just that they got divorced. When they first told me that they were getting divorced when I was 8, I thought I was going to be Annie because I had no real context. And so I just assumed, you know, my only sort of reference point was a musical orphan.
Uh-huh. Yep.
So
yep,
I think
yep.
I thought that's what I was going to be. But once they sort of, they separated and life went on, everything was fine. I honestly, what I think messed with my head for a little bit, and probably to this day there's a lot of shrapnel, was not that they got divorced, was watching them, really my mother, date a lot of people, and I would walk in on her accidentally in sort of in ways that you wouldn't want your kid walking in.
Oh, no.
With the guy who inevitably became her husband, but I'm sure there are others that I've, again, blocked out. So I think it really... I think that shaped, that was right around when I was 8 and 9 and 10. It was right around sort of those formative, at least sexual years. They're not sexy years, but when you're sort of learning about it. And so I think I took more away from sort of sex and monogamy than I did about marriage or anything like that. But that said, yeah, I think I for a long time, I didn't understand the concept of marriage. To this day, I still think, look, I'm married happily and will be forever, but I think I can both be that and think that marriage is a ridiculous, antiquated concept that started a gazillion years ago when it was about a dowry and, you know, women,
right.
You know, you married and it was about money, and then people lived in tiny towns of like 6 people, and so you had to marry anybody. What else are you going to do? And like
right.
women died at childbirth anyways. It's an entire system that comes from a different era, and I think it doesn't necessarily belong in our era, but within the construct of how families work and sort of the rules and whatever of society, I'm perfectly happy in it, and so is Michelle. And
yeah.
If this is a way of saying, hey, I'm committed to you, I'm going to do it on paper, fine. If I need to, you know, if you need to change your last name, whatever needs to happen, great, whatever.
Right, right. No, I'm with you on that. Having gone through divorce and seeing how long that can take, as opposed to getting married, you can get married really quickly, but getting divorced
yeah.
can take like years.
Yeah.
And just the legality of it all. And like, I'm just like, what? It's so bizarre that like—
It's so silly.
Lawyers get involved in my relationship. It is bonkers. But yet I'm with you. I mean, like I could see myself getting married again. It's kind of funny how that works.
Yeah. I imagine, and I don't know this because I have not been divorced, but I imagine it's probably like childbirth and that it's probably horrible. And then some weird thing in your brain allows you to forget how horrible it was in order to do
yes.
it again.
Right. Something like that. But so how did you meet Michelle? And then how did you decide that marriage was for you, et cetera, et cetera?
Michelle and I met actually... It's so dumb. My stepmother sent me an email a long time ago. Well, no, she called me and was like, there's this girl. My stepmother's always trying to set me up with people in my 20s, even when I had a girlfriend. And one of those times I was in a car with a girl and I was like, can you just email me? And she was like, all right. And so she emailed me and she's like, there's this girl moving to LA. She just got there right up your alley, blonde, blue eyes, which false. My girlfriend just before was like super Jewy, dark hair, like not the blonde, blue eyed, whatever. She was like, please take her out. I'm begging you. If it sucks, I'll owe you. She comes from a great family, which might as well have been underlined and italicized. And it was just this kind of ridiculous email. And so I just copied Michelle's email address and forwarded this email to Michelle. And I thought, if this girl is at all cool, she'll appreciate this ridiculous email from my stepmother. Right. And she wrote back something like, yeah, my mother said that you're like a douchey actor. And we hung out that night and that was, you know, like 15 years ago.
Oh my God, I love it. And then in 2017, you became parents to Charlie, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Whatever was almost 4 years ago.
So what kind of like surprised you about fatherhood? Like just generally, did you have a concept of what it would be like? Do you feel like you're becoming your parents at all?
Yes. No. I think yes and no, I guess. I think you're always, I mean, obviously the old cliche of you're being a parent is just trying to undo all of your own parents' mistakes. But there's a lot of things about my dad, my mom that I emulate as well. Although it's, you know, it is kind of funny to me that like one day Charlie will be like married to a woman or a man. At some point he'll be in a fight with his husband or wife or whatever. And they will say, okay, Ben. And they'll mean it as an insult and he'll storm out of the room. Like,
you're thinking ahead to that moment. I love that.
Like that is just inevitable that someone will use my name to insult my children by saying, you're just like Ben. Like, I know that's going to happen.
Oh, my God.
Because that's every relationship.
What do you think that they're going to be doing?
Oh, God, it could be so many things that they could be doing that would be like me and the wrong thing to do. I'm sure it'll involve complaining or saying something inappropriate. Who knows? But yeah, no, a lot. You asked, you know, was I ready? I don't think anybody is. I think anybody who says that they're ready is lying. And anybody who says that it's easy or that anything has gone smoothly is lying. One thing that I tell a lot of, I have a friend who's going to be a dad soon. Mm-hmm. And I was just telling him what I tell all of my guy friends that are going to be, I say, you know, probably the kid's going to come out and you're going to be like, oh my God, something in me has changed. I love this thing, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. If you're like me, that won't actually be the case. If you're like me, you'll look at the kid and you'll go, yeah, on paper, I love this thing and I get that I would do anything for it or whatever. But secretly you're thinking, am I incapable of love? Am I a narcissist? Why do I see my wife having this unbelievable, like just physical animal connection to this kid. And I'm just sort of like, yeah, all the boxes are checked, but I don't have that feeling. I'm happy to walk away from this thing. And it's just a thing to me. And then somewhere around 6, 7, 8 months or whatever, that dissipated. And maybe I am a narcissist. Maybe it started with like when Charlie, because he was our first, started laughing at my own jokes. And I was like, oh, this thing appreciates me. Now I love it. But whatever it was, at some point around that time, something changed for me. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. I would jump into traffic for this thing. And it's no longer a thing. And now they're all I think about. And you know, we're going, my wife and I are going away for a couple nights to Mexico in a couple weeks. And while I cannot wait to sleep past 6:30 a.m. And to day drink, I know that I'm going to like be thinking about and desperately missing them the entire time we're there. And that's not something I could have pictured, you know, 1 month into Charlie's life.
Oh, I think that's such an important message, though. It hits different people at different times. That's just like that flood of parent love right there. And it doesn't always happen at first.
Yeah. And there's a little bit of a learned, not to belittle the mother's experience, because that's just a one of sort of the miracles of human nature is that they can make that connection so quickly. But a lot of times with the dad, a lot of times, not always, it's almost a learned or earned kind of love. And because you're irrelevant for months. You're so irrelevant. You're a housekeeper. You're the guy that you're the grocery store goer to, or you're whatever needs to happen, but you're not necessary to the kid. You're in the way a lot of the times. And so it's really, it can be scary, I think, and a lot of dads won't admit that because it's such an ugly thing to say. Like, you know, 1 month in, everyone's saying, you must be so excited. This is so special. You can't say, yeah, I guess, but that's sort of how I felt.
No, you're not allowed. You just have to go, yeah.
Yeah, you have to go, yes, oh my God, something in me is different. I'm a new person now. You know, the world is different to me. The sun is always shining, blah, blah, blah. And it's bullshit. Or at least it was for me.
But maybe more of us should say, yeah, I guess, maybe, you know, maybe we should be a little bit more honest about those feelings.
Yeah, and what was great with Effie the second time around was I knew that's how it would go. And so the confidence in knowing that will come if it's not there at the beginning kind of makes everything so much easier and more relaxing and happy.
Yeah.
And it allowed me to actually sort of develop whatever that connection is with Effie sooner because I wasn't constantly worried that I just would never have it.
Yeah, no, totally. And you know what? I'm a mom too. And I've just discovered that I don't think I'm a big baby person. I loved her as a baby, but I think I love
babies.
Her even. Fuck babies.
I hate babies.
Did I just say
so
that?
Much. They're the worst.
No.
Babies suck,
no.
Man.
Babies, listen. I have to feel like I have to back up a little. Babies are great. My daughter was the best baby in the world naturally.
Sure.
But 5-year-olds, way better. Definitely.
I want someone
anytime.
I can have a conversation with. Babies don't do anything and they just take and take and take. And if they're not taking, they're crying and they're just, I don't know. That's the other thing. Maybe that's really what it was, is I just couldn't pretend that I was happy to have a baby in my house. And the second Effie, you know, once the diapers went away, like all the little sort of milestones that say she's no longer a baby, you know, to my wife, it was depressing because it's like, this is the last time this will ever happen. To me, it was like, great. This is it. This is the real beginning for me.
Right, right. So you guys are done. 2 kids, done.
Done. Done.
Done. So.
Done.
So speaking of done, we're almost done here. And thank you so much, Ben, for chatting. So now as a family, though, has the pandemic kind of changed? What are you kind of looking forward to in the future? If anything, has it kind of changed your outlook on family at all or changed your perspective?
My wife and I, this is another thing that we sort of say in hushed tones, but the pandemic really kind of was, and a lot of parents would probably agree with this, a really magical time for us. We didn't have 6, 7, 8-year-old kid. You know, like I feel bad for the families that were having to do all the classes at home and had to work on homework. And the kids were the most important time for these kids to be around their friends wasn't happening. We were really lucky in that our kids were an age that kind of made it just really nice. We were forced to stay at home. Everybody else was too. We spent a lot of time. My wife said very early on in the pandemic, she's like, you know, we're going to look back on this and say, oh my God, what an exhausting time. Thank God that's over. And our kids are going to look back as much as they can and be like, that was the greatest summer or whatever of our lives.
Right.
Of our 3 or 2 years in existence. And that's, I think we learned a lot. I think we learned a lot about being together as a family. We had a lot of incredible times and spent a lot of time together that we would not have were it not for a worldwide pandemic. So there are silver linings and things to be grateful in certain situations. Of course, it was an awful disaster and it continues to be. And I hate to say that anything about it was nice for us, but there was something about that was really kind of great.
Yeah, I think that's a universal feeling for sure. The ups and the downs of the pandemic for parents. Ben Feldman, thank you so much for coming on We Are Family. This has been so awesome. This has been so great to chat. I feel like I could go on and on and on.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I hope it gets edited down to just me talking trash about babies and then porn and drugs.
Yes.
And then I'm like, but the pandemic was great. And then you just go on to someone with like an actual real
and then
person
I'm like,
life.
Cool. Anyway, so
gross.
No, it's good. This is awesome. Thanks, Ben.
It was great to talk to you.
All right. This has been great. Take care. Okay. Thanks for listening to my conversation with the hilarious Ben Feldman. What a joy to speak to him. Come back next week when we'll be talking to the very stylish Tan France from Netflix's Queer Eye about his journey to parenthood with the help of a surrogate and the first frantic weeks of being a dad after his son made an unexpected entry into the world. Be sure to follow We Are Family on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen so you don't miss an episode. And we'd love your feedback. If you could rate this podcast and leave us a review, we'd really appreciate it. You can also find us online at parents.com/WeAreFamilyPodcast. We Are Family is presented by me, Julia Dennison, and produced by Sam Walker. Editing is by Vincent Cascione, and thanks also to the rest of our production team at Pod People, Rachel King, Matt Sav, and Danielle Roth. We'll see you back here next week for more We Are Family.